And around this time every Saturday night, we have Gaza Corner. I'm Dory Stein, and hello again. War is seldom black and white. The fog of war is the norm. And it's really rare what we're seeing now, where the mainstream media, Democrats and Republicans, the European Union, and the world's most powerful corporations are all on the same page, united behind one cause. You'd have to go back to World War II to find such unity against a common enemy. I think President Biden has struck a correct course thus far, potentially crippling sanctions while trying not to escalate the war beyond Ukraine's borders. The boycott, divestment, and sanctions leveled on Russia are unprecedented in world history. Did I say boycott, divestment, and sanctions? That's kind of a radioactive term, at least it was, until Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Overnight, the tools of boycott, divestment, and sanctions have become the toast of the world. I mean, it was really a naughty word, even criminal. Boycott was noble when applied to South Africa. That was a long time ago. It's become vernacular non grata for the past 17 years until Russia invaded Ukraine, because in 2005, the BDS movement, Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions, was formed, and I'll quote from the About page on its website, BDS is a Palestinian-led movement for freedom, justice, and equality. BDS upholds the simple principle that Palestinians are entitled to the same rights as the rest of humanity. For nearly 70 years, 70, Israel has denied Palestinians their fundamental rights and has refused to comply with international law. Continuing from the BDS website, Israel maintains a regime of settler colonialism, apartheid, and occupation over the Palestinian people. This is only possible because of international support. Governments fail to hold Israel to account, while corporations and institutions across the world help Israel to oppress Palestinians, because those in power refuse to act to stop this injustice. Palestinian civil society has called for global citizens' response of solidarity with the Palestinian struggle for freedom, justice, and equality, unquote. The distinguished Palestinian scholar and leader and activist, Hanan Ashwari, tweeted on February 27th, quote, "Once and for all, unless the victim is white, European, Christian, and U.S.-Israel friendly, resistance is terrorism. International law does not apply. Vetoes apply. Refugees have no right to return and are unwelcome. And the aggressor has the right to self-defense and to acquire territory by war." Unquote the words of Hanan Ashwari. The publisher of Mondo Weiss, Scott Roth, and Mondo Weiss features news and opinion on Palestine, Israel, and the U.S. He wrote, quote, "It would seem that no principle is at play here except that Israel is beyond reproach." It's more than just the double standard on BDS, though. It's the glaring hypocrisy on how one group's resistance to occupation is framed versus that of another group's. Racism certainly plays a part in this, but there's also a political component as well, that guides a certain maxim that says that no matter how justified Palestinians are in the abstract, they can never be justified given the fact that they are fighting Israel, unquote. The Intercept had a few good articles on this topic. Jeremy Scahill asks this question, quote, how can people argue in favor of Ukrainian rights to self-defense while simultaneously stripping Palestinians of that same right, unquote? Scahill's colleague at The Intercept, Peter Maas, told what I think is an important truth, quote, prejudice tilts our choices about which history to highlight and which history to ignore, unquote. You can read Scahill's article at the Gaza Corner section of tonight's playlist. That's always found at tangents.com, left-hand column, and click on the Tangents playlist. Harry, the playlist guru, has all set it up for you. So it's a wonderful resource for every Gaza Corner. It's all the source material that I use. I would go a step further than what Peter Maas said. I'd say that prejudice oftentimes is rooted in ignorance. And that's due to the perpetuating myths, perpetuating false narratives. And that leads to ignorance. Back in June of 1967, Israel launched a war known as the Six-Day War. The narrative that justified Israel's invasion was that Israel was facing the threat of extermination and so acted preemptively for its survival. That narrative probably sticks with a lot of people to this very day, despite the fact that Israel's own generals have admitted it was completely made up, totally fabricated. This coming June, it'll be the 55th anniversary of the Six-Day War. Saturday is June 4th. I will dedicate Gaza Corner to explaining why Israel started this war in June of 67, June 5th, and why the narrative was never true but intentionally put out there. And again, don't take my word for the fact that the narrative is false. Check out the story that's linked at the Gaza Corner section of the playlist. It's an amazing piece of research from Joseph Ryan. It's called The Myth of Annihilation and the Six-Day War. It's an amazing read. If you're interested in this, you've got to look at it. The generals were intimately involved in the planning and the execution of this Six-Day War. It resulted in Israel conquering the West Bank, which it has informally annexed. For all intents and purposes, it has annexed it, except it's just not called annexation. The Gaza Strip also was conquered, and it's been under siege and blockade since 2007. The Golan Heights, which was part of Syria, is illegally occupied by Israel. And the United States, because of Trump, is the only country in the world to recognize Israel's sovereignty in the Golan. Israel also captured East Jerusalem, which under Trump formally recognized Jerusalem as the undivided capital of Israel, again, contrary to international law. There's an article, it's from Stephen Zunis. The article says the U.S. supports illegal annexations by Israel. He adds Morocco as well. There's another article, it's a Peter Beinart article in The Guardian. The U.S. supports illegal annexations. Why the hypocrisy? The U.S. just reeks with double standards. It correctly calls out Russia for war crimes and violations of international law, but the U.S. provides a protective shield for Israel to do the very same thing, war crimes and violations of international law. The U.S. itself has a history of war crimes and also violating international law. You can look no further than the invasion of Iraq in 2003 and the subsequent occupation. There's outrage at Russia reportedly using banned weapons, such as cluster bombs. And there are fears that Russia will use chemical weapons in Ukraine, as Russia has allegedly done in Syria. Israel has made an industry out of testing banned and experimental weapons, and they test them on human beings who live in Gaza. It also has used white phosphorus, that's a chemical weapon, in Gaza, and cluster bombs in Lebanon. You can Google Human Rights Watch, flooding South Lebanon, Israel's use of cluster munitions in Lebanon in July and August 2006. You can also Google Human Rights Watch, March 25th, 2009, Rain of Fire, Israel's unlawful use of white phosphorus in Gaza. Russia is being rightfully condemned for the targeting of civilian populations and infrastructure, including hospitals in Ukraine. It's right out of the Israel playbook from Gaza. And it's mowing the lawn operations in Gaza in 2008, 9, 2012, 2014, May of last year. Israel has the most precise rockets and bombs known to humankind. Yet every time it assaults Gaza, critical infrastructure are destroyed time and again. Hospitals and schools are hit. During the 2014 51-day assault, the UN reported over 2,200 deaths in Gaza, two-thirds civilian. Over 500 were children. Another glaring example of hypocrisy stems from British Foreign Secretary Liz Truss. Liz openly supports Ukraine's President Zelensky's call to foreigners to join the armed struggle against Russia's invasion. I support it too. Just as if I was alive way back when in the 1930s, I would have supported foreigners in the fight against Franco in Spain. Yet, citizens of England face prison if they join an equally just cause, joining the stateless Kurds to fight the Islamic State in Rojava in northeastern Syria. The invasion of Ukraine has created the biggest mass refugee exodus since World War II, but here again, there is refugee hypocrisy steeped in racism. There's an excellent opinion piece, thanks to Patricia Port for turning me on to it. It was written by CNN's Arwa Damon. It's called The Gross Hypocrisy of the West's Refugee Response. It's linked at the Tangents playlist. Quote, "Today it feels like the world has woken up and finally realized how ruthless and murderous the Russian government is. As if for years, Syrians were not dying under the same Russian bombs. As if countless Syrian voices were not begging the world to help them. At the time, they asked me, why doesn't the world care about us? But I could never answer the question without crushing them even more." How do you tell someone their life is not part of a geopolitical calculus, that in the grand scheme of the puppet masters, their life is not worth all that much? We are painfully seeing that refugees are selectively welcomed and war criminals are selectively punished. It's not just that the Western media is biased. It's the Western world. The ugly truth is our humanity is skin deep, and it breaks my heart, unquote. The words of Ara Damon of CNN. There's an opinion piece in the Israeli newspaper Haaretz from Sharon Fala Saab. It's called Western Media Likes Its Refugees Blonde and Blue-Eyed. In the article, she discusses a CBS reporter who describes what was happening in Ukraine with great sadness. Quote, "This isn't a place, with all due respect, like Iraq or Afghanistan that has seen conflict raging for decades. You know, this is a relatively civilized, relatively European city where you wouldn't expect that or hope that it's going to happen," unquote. BBC journalist Erman Abdurrahman said, quote, "It's really emotional for me because I see European people with blue eyes and blonde hair being killed," unquote. And then there's this one. I don't know how well the audio is going to come off because it's kind of faint from the source, but I want you to hear from this NBC reporter. Her name is Kelly Kobiela. This is what she had to say.
"Just to put it bluntly, these are not refugees from Syria. These are refugees from neighboring Ukraine. And that, quite frankly, is part of it. These are Christians, they're white, they're very similar to people, many people with..."
They look like me, so we empathize all the more. At least it's honest racist journalism, if you will. It takes a photo for the West to show some sort of compassion. Remember the photo of the Kurdish child, 3 years old? His name was Eylan. He was a Kurdish refugee from Syria. His dead body was on the beach in a shirt and blue pants. And that became a photo that was plastered on the headlines everywhere. And for a short while, people were very empathetic to the refugees that were fleeing Syria and Afghanistan. Columnist and blogger Peter Beinart wrote, quote, "Race does help explain America's response to Ukraine. It helps explain why so many reporters have expressed shock that these atrocities could occur in Europe. It helps explain why Congress authorizes military aid to help Ukrainians resist foreign military occupation while penalizing Palestinians who in the West Bank have lived under foreign military occupation for more than a half century merely for urging nonviolent boycotts. It helps explain why the Biden administration is offering safe haven to Ukrainians, but not to migrants from war-ravaged African countries like Ethiopia and Mali," unquote. I'll end Gaza Corner with this excerpt from Jack Corey, who is a columnist from Haaretz. His piece is, "The World United for Sanctions on Russia. Why can't it do the same for Palestinians?" Quote, "What Palestinians have been clamoring for the last 50 years was quickly internalized by the West in Ukraine. Decisions to mobilize for stopping an aggressive occupier, imposing economic sanctions, closing airspace, and boycotting sports and cultural events were implemented within 7 days. Ukrainians will receive weapons, ammunition, intelligence, and technology that could wear down Vladimir Putin and the Russians. A parallel demand to implement resolutions by the UN Security Council and the wider international community for the benefit of the Palestinians sounds like a stale joke. International law is good for lectures. Any initiative to advance a significant step at the UN, mainly at the Security Council, encounters an American veto. Any call for condemnation or sanctions encounters cries of anti-Semitism or a prize for terror," quote unquote, "with accusations that this will undermine efforts of a two-state solution." And my two cents, that nail is in that coffin. The only possibility is one state with equal rights for all, unless settlements are going to be dismantled, which is hard to imagine at the moment. Getting back to Jack Quarry, quote, many Palestinians side with Putin not because they support tyranny or have sadistic feelings as an occupied people, but out of an understanding that the enlightened world no longer embraces justice, democracy, and human rights. Instead, it acts based on security and economic considerations. If you're strong, we can talk. If you're weak, we'll trample you. That's the equation. The quote from Jack Quarry.